Welcome back to The Hidden Agenda, a podcast brought to you by Changing Relations. I'm Primrose, a student at Durham University and an intern at Changing Relations, and today I'm joined by Michael Priestley, who is a research student in the School of Education at Durham University and a fellow of the Wolfson Research Institute for Health and Wellbeing. Today we're talking about gender and mental health, specifically men's mental health and body image. It's such an interesting conversation and a topic that really isn't talked about enough. I hope you enjoy having a listen. Michael, thank you so much for being here today. You wrote a blog for Changing Relations in 2019 about how gender norms impact on men's mental health. Could you tell me a bit about what you wrote about, kind of what inspired you?
Yeah, of course. So firstly, thank you very much for inviting me to talk to you. So as I started my blog by saying, obviously men's experiences and mental health experiences vary significantly depending on lots of different factors. So I can only really share my own mental health experiences as a man and some of my experiences rather than obviously speaking for all men. But essentially what I was talking about in my blog is certain dominant gender norms in society that particularly impact on men and how that can shape men's emotional experiences and mental health experiences. And kind of what I was essentially suggesting was that, or at least from my experience, is that these gender norms, so that men don't really talk about emotions and that men are kind of typically brave and strong and confident, can impact on men's kind of help seeking and how comfortable they feel to access certain support when they're experiencing difficulties. It can impact on men's what I termed kind of mental health or emotional literacy. So this is something for me, I find it quite hard to develop a language to talk about my kind of emotional experiences, which kind of feeds into that some of the barriers about accessing support or sharing how I'm feeling with different people, because I guess kind of through society and growing up, there aren't really too many spaces for men to develop and kind of practice a language to talk about their emotions. And then the other thing was just it can kind of as a result, I guess, of that is, or at least from my experiences, is that I think gender norms can impact on actual emotional experiences themselves. So for me, the kind of inspiration for this was reading Robert Webb's How Not to Be a Boy, which he talks about some very similar themes, and they really resonated with me in terms of saying that as a man, there's lots of kind of messages in society about not showing certain emotions such as sadness or fear or embarrassment or certain forms of I guess weakness. And as a result of that, it becomes very, as a man, you can kind of, it becomes almost like don't feel those things. So I was just reflecting, and this is something that Robert Webb talked about, and I was reflecting from my own experiences, that actually times when I feel quite scared or anxious, actually at the time I kind of experienced that emotion as anger, or certain other emotions, frustration perhaps, that I feel more comfortable with, because as a man, we're a little bit more showing anger and being angry is perhaps something that we're a little bit more comfortable A with having and B with showing. So I think in my blog, I was essentially just saying that some of these kind of gender norms about typical models of masculinity and the impact on how masculinity frames men showing emotions can kind of really impact on men's sense of mental health and well-being by just shaping the language that we have to talk about and experience emotions.
Great, thank you so much. So in your blog, you say that there's a predominant model of masculinity which consists of 4 points. Number one, don't talk about or show emotions, like you said, and be brave and physically strong. Number 3 is have sex with women. And number 4, drink beer. I was particularly intrigued by that last one. Could you sort of expand on that culture, I guess, sort of pub culture, maybe a bit of sort of lad culture, especially in the UK, that you think, why you think that's part of being masculine?
Yeah, so I guess those kind of last two points that I picked up are just things that I've noticed from my experience. And the one about have sex with women, I think there's perhaps changing slightly, but more slowly than I'd like. There's kind of a compulsory heterosexuality and a kind of mild homophobia in traditional masculine models, where anything that's kind of seen as gay is kind of, I guess in opposition to that rule is kind of seen in opposition to masculinity and something to be kind of laughed at or feared. In terms of drinking beer, I just something I've just always been intrigued about growing up, and it just kind of for me represents how a lot of our understanding of the gender are quite arbitrary. But just how I remember, just as a late teenager, just how much you could drink was kind of specifically beer. How much beer you could drink was somehow indicative of your status as a man and as a status of your masculinity, and I'm just, yeah, from my own experiences, as I say, perhaps it's because men feel less comfortable or have less opportunity to develop a language to talk about emotion, that any kind of emotional experiences for men seem to involve alcohol, and that seems to be the times when men feel most comfortable to show any of these emotions that are quite difficult, and that can come out in some quite unhelpful ways sometimes. But also I think for me, and this comes back to what I was saying before about how it kind of can infuse some of those actual emotional experiences, is that kind of lots of times that kind of the male solution, and again, I don't want to speak for all men, but sometimes the male solution to experiencing emotional difficulties is to go out and get drunk and drink beer. And yeah, so I think for me, that is something that I've just noticed from my experience as being kind of quite indicative and reflective of these kind of gender norms, that idea of drinking beer.
Yeah, I definitely would agree. I've, you know, observed that, especially in sort of university culture. And there's a really big drinking culture. I also wonder if, because sort of alcohol removes inhibitions, so almost it's the only road where you can express yourself if you feel like normally you're, that wouldn't be okay. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think there's kind of this interesting thing for, again, it might be for women too, but I'm thinking especially of men, of how with alcohol and alcohol culture there can be this kind of fine line between banter and like emotional expression, and sometimes it's quite easy, I guess, to A, express emotions if you're less comfortable to with the help of alcohol, but B, if you feel like you've uncomfortable about it, it's easier to kind of pass that off as just being kind of having a bit too much to drink and kind of not really kind of, I guess, addressing or understanding emotions or coming to terms with any of the consequences of emotions. So yeah, I definitely agree with that.
I feel like men's mental health really isn't talked about as much as women's mental health. I feel like there are a lot of pathways and sort of more media coverage of ways, say, women can get help, and it's advertised to them more clearly. To the extent that I think a lot of people don't realise that there is actually what's called the silent men's health crisis at the moment. And I'm just going to give you some stats for people listening who maybe just don't really realise that there's this problem that's going on. So 1 in 8 men have common mental health disorders, for example, depression, anxiety or OCD. Men are 3 times more likely than women to die by suicide, which is also the biggest killer of men under 45. These are stats that Changing Relations are really focusing on in their work to raise awareness to men and young boys to talk about, you know, amongst themselves. When you talk about mental health literacy, what are some sort of pathways through which you would suggest or, you know, raise awareness of for men to sort of talk about these problems?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I don't have a kind of very clear and simple solution. I think what you've said is important, that sometimes men's mental health isn't perhaps presented in the same way. And sometimes when men's mental health is talked about, they're kind of just the emphasis is just on men talking more about their problems. And actually, I would suggest that that might be a slight oversimplification, and that we need to provide kind of places and spaces for men to develop some of their kind of emotional and mental health literacy to feel more comfortable about talking about emotions. It's kind of something that we have to practice and develop confidence in doing so. And I think that needs to start kind of much earlier. I think it involves reassessing a bit some of those rules of masculinity that I spoke about and how they're communicated in so many ways across society. And obviously that requires kind of big kind of social level change. But I guess at more a manageable change for me, I think at a younger age in schools, I don't want to necessarily say workshops, but also kind of role models, I guess, of ways of communicating and expressing certain emotions that I kind of suggested before are a bit kind of prohibited for men, such as fear or embarrassment, and just finding ways, whether that's perhaps even in an all-male environment in the first instance, if men feel more comfortable with that, to just get comfortable with talking to each other and exploring some of the language and experience around their emotions.
Great, thank you so much. That's really interesting. Another one of my stats is that 61% of men or people in this survey agree that men are stereotyped in the media. Now, I imagine that's not just sort of in terms of personality and expression, but in terms of image. And one of the things that you also said that you like to talk about is men and their relationship with their body image, which is really seen, I think, more often as an issue that's directed towards women. A lot of the time, I think personally as a woman, I see images all the time that are focused on women's bodies, say in advertisements that are completely unrelated, like, you know, yogurt and dog food and things like that. But I think we don't really, you know, express enough how men are seen in the media and their body images. Could you tell me your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so firstly, I totally agree with you. The reason why it kind of interests me is I guess from personal experience, is there's not really many spaces or places where men kind of openly talk about their bodies and their kind of experiences or insecurities with their body image, kind of apart from perhaps professional athletes that are like recovering from injury or something. It's just totally silent. Coming back to what you were saying before, it's just totally silent. But I'm not convinced that it's not something that men experience. I think there are also lots of or again, at least from my experience, I feel like there are lots of messages in society, less prominent than, as you say, the way that like female bodies are represented. But there are images about how men should look, to kind of linking back to what I said, to be kind of strong and this indicator of masculinity, but also to kind of to be acceptable to women. That there are still some messages, albeit to a lesser extent. And I just think there isn't really a space for men to talk about this. And I also feel like women tend to be, or again, at least from my observations, are a little bit better at being kind of nice to each other about kind of the way that they look, whereas I think, as I said before, this idea that this kind of what I called compulsive heterosexuality and a mild kind of homophobia underpinning dominant masculine models is that men are really kind of really cautious about actually being complimentary about the way that other men look, And I just think the combination of all those things, so you still have the kind of some social pressures about the way that men should look to be kind of a man and acceptable to women, not having a space to kind of talk about it can be quite difficult for men.
Yeah, I definitely agree, especially with your point about this sort of negative attitude towards homosexuality. I don't know if you're familiar with the term, say, I've really heard this so often when a man says something nice about another man and then he'll say, oh, no homo. So saying something nice and then immediately casting that off and putting a negative light on it. I guess an expression of toxic masculinity that sort of wended its way into our everyday conversations.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So coming up is International Women's Day, which is on March 8th. And I bring this up because the most frequently tweeted question on International Women's Day is, when is International Men's Day? I think there's sort of a dark background to this question, because I think there's a perception that International Women's Day is sort of extreme feminism and trying to push towards female supremacy. And I think it also stems from slight ignorance, because International Men's Day is November 19th. And I think Movember, so actually men get a whole, you know, month of Movember, which I think gets a lot more media attention. Obviously, you get sponsored to grow out your moustache to raise money for men's mental health. But I think International Men's Day, similarly to International Women's Day, tries to tackle, you know, the problems that even in this sort of patriarchal society that, you know, it doesn't benefit men in all ways. So International Men's Day seems to get sort of less attention and less coverage and less prominent advertising than International Women's Day. But could you tell me your thoughts on International Men's Day and maybe sort of how to get involved?
Yeah, so it's a really, really good point. I haven't really spoken about, but I think it's worth really emphasizing, is that these kind of experiences that the impact on men's mental health are also pretty rubbish for women too, and that it leads men to behave in ways either consciously or subconsciously towards women that are not very nice. And instead of thinking about, I guess, in terms of these kind of days or improving things for men as being kind of in competition with improving things for women, it's very much kind of overlapping for me, as just we need for everybody to challenge some of these really unhelpful toxic models of gender norms that dominate in our society and that can be quite unhealthy for everybody. In terms of International Men's Day, I must say it's something that before, I think last year, and I got involved with Change in Relations, it was something that I wasn't familiar with too, which I guess shows a little bit about the publicity it receives. But yeah, I would encourage you to, even as a starting point, just join the conversation on social media. At the moment, that is where a lot of conversations taking place, because we can't meet in person. And just as a way, I think, of just slowly, but we need to find a way of challenging some of the stereotypes and expectations around men. And one way of doing that is getting involved and feeling able to share your experiences or thoughts, or express things about your experience about being a man that you might wish were different, or things that could be different, and finding a way to voice them.
Great, thank you so much. So maybe a bit of a deep question: how would you try to redefine manliness? What do you think that might look like?
Oh, that's an excellent question. I think for me, basically, one of the main ways that I would redefine masculine and manliness is around kind of care and compassion and kindness. And I think some of those values are really underplayed in normal models of, I say normal, kind of dominant models of masculinity, and associated with kind of being feminine, but are actually really important in terms of care and compassion to oneself, and being, I guess, understanding of one's own emotions and ways of addressing them, but also compassionate and kind and caring to others, to friends and to women. And yeah, I think ultimately at its heart, if I was to redefine masculine roles, it would be around reintroducing, I guess, that it's okay to be compassionate and care about other people. We don't have to be in competition, or we don't have to be scared that if we're nice to somebody, that means that we're homosexual or girly. And also that we can find a way where men can feel able to talk about and express their emotions in healthier ways than at the moment, because I think there's kind of the ways that men are able to experience and express emotions are restricted, and that can lead to some of these really unhealthy patterns that we see around men and male alcohol abuse and male violence and things like that. And if we just were able to find a way from of having an image of masculinity in which emotions were permitted, and that kind of emotional literacy was really valued, I think that would be really helpful for everybody, for men, but also for women.
I definitely agree with that. I also think there are things that need to be put into place sort of more structurally, which would help everyone. Something that springs to mind is childcare leave, I think is really focused towards women, and maternity leave. So we're not yet giving sort of an equal opportunity for men to, or encouraging men to stay at home and care for their children. I think that's something that we really need to look to change.
Totally agree, yeah.
So my sort of final question is that if you had sort of written a second blog post, what would you have said? By which I mean a sort of continuation of your thoughts, in that what's sort of the next step that we can take to start looking after men's mental health?
Yeah, a really, really good question. I think I kind of closed the blog I wrote saying a bit like what I said before, that we it would be helpful to expand our sense of improving men's mental health beyond just telling men that they need to talk about their feelings more, and perhaps find a way of understanding how that is conditioned and shaped by lots of the social factors and ways that we construct masculinity, and that kind of it can almost be a little bit it's oversimplistic, but also slightly offensive, just to suggest that men kind of wants to talk lots about their feelings but choose not to, and that actually there's more complex reasons about how men experience and are able to articulate emotions. So that's how I finished. I guess if I was to write another blog, it would come back to some of the points I've just made. I would definitely emphasize the way that I totally agree with what you're saying before about how for too many people, I think improving things for men and improving things for women are kind of situated in opposition, and they don't need to be, and that there needs to be a way of working together. And I think also just finding a way to develop, starting by I would need to have a bit of a think about some of the most effective ways of doing that, but to develop men's emotional literacy and develop places and spaces that men can talk about emotions other than just kind of anger or irritability or those emotions, and perhaps where men can express feelings and sadness and fears and embarrassment and insecurities and vulnerabilities and just develop more, become more confident in developing that language and the confidence to speak about those things. Because I think that's ultimately where the change needs to come. Obviously, the challenge is that that's a massive change to take place that requires a kind of whole social cultural shift. And just thinking about some of the more practical ways to initiate that. But yeah, ultimately, I think going forward for men's mental health, we need to perhaps, obviously, it's really well-intentioned and it's really important that men do feel that they do talk more about and access support services when they experience kind of mental health or emotional difficulties or whatever they may be. But also, I think just trying to develop role models and develop spaces for men to develop their kind of emotional literacy is kind of the most important thing to improving men's mental health.
Thank you so much, Michael. That's some really great things to be thinking about. Just before I sign off, is there anything more that's sort of on your mind that you wanted to share?
I think the main thing that I would just really hope that any listeners can help me contribute to is just men feeling able to talk about their bodies, because I just don't hear this anywhere apart from like professional athletes. It's totally kind of obliterated from the social conversation that men might ever experience kind of insecurity about the way that they look. So I would just invite anybody to help me in contributing to some of that social shift in terms of saying that men are also, albeit to a lesser extent, but are exposed to images about how men's bodies should look and how men need to look to be acceptable to women, and that can create certain pressures and insecurities, and that it's okay and helpful to express and share them with other people. As a way of kind of some of those insecurities, as a way of, I guess, addressing them or tackling them.
Thank you so much for joining me, Michael. It's been really interesting talking to you. If you're listening, I really hope you came away with some new awareness of the issues around men's mental health and body image, and feel free to start having those conversations. I hope you enjoyed listening to the Hidden Agenda podcast. For more information about Changing Relations and their amazing work, follow them on Instagram at Changing Relations, on Facebook and on the web at www.changingrelations.co.uk.